Hey, I'm Jim Zartman. Welcome to the Enneagram Podcast. This is our final episode as we talk about the Type 7, and I am here with Enneagram coach Joel Hubbard.
And I am a 7.
Who is a 7?
You know, it's funny because I would have thought, oh, I can't wait to do this 7 panel, right? But part of me was a little apprehensive because I'm also realizing as they're talking, they're speaking my language. They're talking about my fears, my anxiety, my hyperactive, my need to run, to always be in motion, to always be grabbing the latest and newest. And even the ones that were on the panel, it's funny because you'll hear some of this stuff. And there's one in particular who was like, oh, yeah, no, I think I'm doing pretty good. You know, I'm sticking to things. And then later on, I get a phone call and this person says, oh, my God, I just like fell off the wagon. I just said a bunch of yeses to a bunch of different things. And it's typical of us sevens. And, you know, so we're growing, we're trying, but then, you know, we fall off. So, yeah, there's this whole, you'll see the energy, you'll feel the energy of the seven there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we're always needing distraction as a way of managing this anxiety internally.
Yeah, I feel like saying as the intro to the 7 podcast, like, just try and keep up.
Yeah,
because they tend to think fast. They tend to find where they're going as they're talking.
As they're talking, exactly.
Totally unlike what I was talking about the 5, which totally waits until they know exactly what they want to say. The 7 starts talking in order to find their thoughts.
Exactly, that's exactly how it is. I don't think I've ever had. My dad used to say, hey, Joel, how about you put your brain in gear before you start, you know, opening your mouth and getting – and he had to say – I even forget it because I hated it so much. But it was that thing, and I never could. Like, and I didn't understand that this is common for a lot of sevens, very common, that the whole thing is extroversion or the processing of our thoughts as we're talking, as we're in motion, you know.
So was it weird to try and mediate – for your own type, to try and like organize the thing and ask questions about people who share your type? Was that weird?
I still don't even know entirely why. Like, I'm still like, why was it so difficult, much more difficult for me to do the 7 panel than it was to do any other panel? And maybe it's the part that I could be objective with the other panels. I could sort of step outside of, you know, it wasn't me, so I could really be objective and help process that. I'm not entirely sure, but this one was definitely one that was a bit more challenging for me. To do that, to try to keep stepping outside of myself to hear them and not jump ahead. In some cases, I felt like I know what's going on with you. I totally relate because I get the same issue, and to step outside of that and really be there, present for them, and help them work through their thoughts.
Yeah, and I just want to remind everyone that as you've been hearing about all these types, and then you hear about this type tonight. One of the main reasons that we listen, we find this stuff, is so that we can learn how to do our work.
Mm.
And I just want to just emphasize that we all have work to do. I think it's Russell Brand who talks about it. It's not about people who are addicted versus people who aren't addicted. It's about people who are working a program and those who are not working a program. Like, we all
well
have
said.
Work to do.
Yeah, for sure.
We all have things that are patterns in our lives. We all have things that we can't see. And so we want to remember that. And I love how vulnerable and transparent everyone has been on all of these panels, just to say, like, this is who I am, this is my issues, and this is how I'm working through them. So I heard one person say that if you want to know which type you really are, it's whichever one you cringe at the most.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, that definitely helped me to understand where I landed was realizing, oh, yeah, that's what I am doing. And the first time I heard it, I didn't really like thinking of myself as the sort of Peter Pan, you know, monkey mind. It all seemed very, not serious, not respectable, you know. So I had those things going. I didn't particularly like that part. So I worked really hard at being something different for a long time, but I wasn't doing the right work. You know, there's a side of each type that we should embrace and love and celebrate. That's what we are. And that's the beauty of who we are. And then the low side, which is the unhealthy part, that's a part we work on. So embracing who you are, understanding who you are. Many of you have these types in your lives, the sevens, and they're difficult to deal with because they're always changing the direction of any project, anything that's going on. They just tend to need to always be running, distracted, busy, almost never available, hardly ever commit to anything. Party type people love to be out there in the parties, having a great time, bouncing around. These people can are a whole lot of fun. Oh man, people love sevens, particularly the really extroverted sevens. People love these people for the sake of fun and play, but not in really deep relationships or in work relationships. They can be particularly challenging because of this this particular pattern we just described.
Yeah, and since you weren't answering questions about you on the podcast like you would be if I had been mediating or something like that, when I first met you, I asked you if you were tired or burned out, because you hadn't really delved into some of this work that you've been doing over the last couple years. And your response initially was, no, I constantly have new vision. That was your response.
I thought that was like a sort of one of those like plus marks,
yeah,
in my columns.
You always had energy. But the energy was actually coming from,
oh man, yeah.
You later learned, like, what did,
oh,
you learn?
Oh yeah, well, it was, yeah, when I was being, you know, taking the classes, and I hear the teacher say, sevens will always have a new idea. And it's part of the dysfunction at times of the seven is this chasing of a new idea. And that crashed my whole world. That was like, oh, I always thought that was a good thing. And, you know, lo and behold, my wife doesn't think it's a great thing. And a lot of other people don't think it's a great thing. And in fact, I remember calling her during that week. I had a week off in between classes. And I said, hey, hon, so I have this like new idea. And I was so excited about it. I'm ready to share it with her. And she just sort of stopped me and said, listen, this is stressful to me. This is exhausting to me. And I put all of those things together in the Enneagram class, the things I'd heard, what you said, you know, the burnout thing. I remember distinctly that moment of saying, oh, no, I always have ideas. And then hearing what I heard at the Enneagram class and then having this conversation with my wife, Patty, and realizing this is not the high side. It's not that I shouldn't have a lot of ideas. That's great. But not understanding that I was chasing them unthinkingly, just in reaction to this fear inside, that self-awareness allows you to say, yes, I'm gifted with a lot of ideas, but I don't need to chase them. I can stay put and do the work that I need to do and be in relationship with people and honor that, and you know, whether it's work relationships or, you know, family relationships, be able to do that within those settings, you know.
Yeah, and this has radically changed you, and I think this speaks to the motivation even why you are doing coaching and why you're wanting to help other people through this journey is because of you, how you've been benefited by it. What has it been like for you to do your work in this area, and what do you think has been the result of it?
Well, there's a bunch of reasons why I love the Enneagram, but it's because it's changed my life. It's the only thing that I can point to and say has given me an understanding, an articulation for the times where I did something right but wasn't exactly sure why. What was it that I was doing? The times where, which were far more prominent, the times where I wasn't doing something that I should be doing and not understanding necessarily what was wrong about it, because I could do a lot of things that seemed, you know, was kind of, you know, it's in the gray area. You know, sevens, we're not going to necessarily be jerks or bad people. We're going to be stealthy about the ways we go about life. And so this gave me articulation language to see what is driving you is this need that you have to consume. You feel like something's missing inside of you. You feel like you don't have enough. You haven't been nurtured. And so you're looking desperately for something and you're chasing it. You're also running from something. What is that you're running from? And when I began the process of discovering that, looking at that, things began to surface. I mean, it's just giving yourself space. There's no magic to it, really. It's just you start to give yourself space to think about these things. And they pop up at different times throughout the day, throughout the weeks, when you're not even thinking about it. All of a sudden, an idea or thought will come, and that explains it right there.
Right.
And the path towards integration, towards health, has been to say, okay, I recognize that this is a new idea. That am I chasing this? Is this something I'm just chasing because I don't want to do these other things, or because I feel this need for – nurture or because I'm running from pain, you know, internal pain or something else. No, I don't have to run. I can stay put. Now, that feels like death to me in that moment. It feels like I'm dying. Self-limitation feels very constrained. I hate it. But doing it produces tremendous results, fruit, like in the sense of, strangely enough, rather than feeling more empty afterwards, I feel satiated. And I feel restful. And that's where the word sobriety, you know, really makes sense for the seven. They move from gluttony to sobriety. And then to hear my wife say to me that she sees the changes and the transformations, and to and people who've worked closely to me say, I'm seeing the changes and the transformation. To me, that became affirming, like hugely affirming. And what I needed to hear, I'm on the right track. I'm doing the right things. And now I'm not less of a seven, but I feel like I'm even more of a seven, but in the right way. Like I can play. I can have so much fun because I can fully enjoy the fun in the present and not just the chase, the anticipation of something that will come around the corner. I can truly be happy right now. Whether I'm playing or I'm sitting still, I have the power to choose in the moment. I don't need anything. Everything I have is right here. And that was profound for me. And that, I think, is what's changed me.
Yeah, I think that's really benefited me too, even though I'm an eight with a seven wing. And as I've been doing this work, my wife's saying that I'm more present, you know, telling me after several months of it that I'm more present to her and our daughter than I've ever been.
Wow, that's
huge.
And
I think that's a huge thing. And yeah, because you've been experiencing this healing, and it's been neat to hear some of the stories from people that you're coaching, people that I know that you're coaching, who are experiencing healing as a part of this journey. And so that's the point. We want to become the best versions of ourselves. We want to become the wholest, most fruitful, most productive, most loving, kind people. And that is one of the reasons that we've invested so much time in this tool. And so we want to go ahead and get on to the seven panel so you can hear from more than, you know, just us, but hear from some people who are in process and how blunt they are about being in process. And I think that is so beautiful because you do, you end up valuing and hearing them and hearing their heart and hearing their voice. And as these people are owning their journey and owning their voice, they're becoming more whole people. And it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
So, all right. So Joel will give an introduction and a description, a further description of the seven, and then you get to hear from them. So thank you so much for going on this journey with us.
This is the seven panel. Sevens early on discern that what life was presenting to them in the moment was insufficient to meet their needs. They had this appetite that exceeded, it seemed, what was presently available to them. Part of it was maybe nurture, even in some wonderfully affectionate and loving homes. Sevens somehow discern or come to this moment where they perceive themselves as not having enough and needing more. And whatever is in the present right now is just not sufficient. And so the seven starts to lean into the future, into what's in front of them. Many sevens would describe even remembering very painful events early on that caused them to repress the emotions and ascend to the head where it's safe. And the head is where the rationalization takes place. It's where the imaginations are. It's where the future is better, it's brighter, it's always better ahead of you than it is right here in this present moment. So you can be having a conversation with somebody, but it's really difficult because as you're talking with them, your mind is going 100 miles an hour and you're thinking of so many different things that you have to do. You've got this to do, you got that to do, you've got this other thing. And many of us become asleep to what's really going on, and that there's this hurriedness, this is anxiety that's functioning underneath. Now, most sevens would say that they're not aware of the anxiety. It's not just not something that they're constantly aware of. It's just this sort of functions in the background that if they slow down long enough, they start to feel it, which is why sevens don't really slow down. Sevens want to always be going. We start to hate the fact that we're so consumed with so many different things, but nonetheless, it's still far better than not having all these wonderful things
in front of us. Sevens tend to be very optimistic. Life is wonderful. When there's a bunch of negative around us, we will spin things to the positive. We'll find the rainbow. We will find that silver lining. Now, it's not that sevens are trying to chronically avoid pain, although that's a big part of the seven pathology, is do anything to avoid pain. But some of us couldn't avoid pain. And so what we did was we faced pain, but we faced pain still without really getting into the space of our own emotions. We're sort of still spending a whole lot of thought. In fact, what's funny about the head triad is we think our feelings. We don't really feel our feelings. And so seven's vice becomes gluttony. Nothing's ever enough. It's just always more, 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 more. And when the seven starts to become healthy, the seven starts to become sober. And sobriety is a wonderful virtue. It's when the seven recognizes, I don't need to consume. I don't need to have more. What I have is enough right here in the present. And that begins the journey of health for the seven. The seven at that point begins to start to look more like a five in many respects. And that's where you see on the diagram. As you can see here, the seven who's the enthusiast. The other thing I want to say about sevens is sevens, because they're called enthusiasts, because sevens can become very easily enthused about any idea. The sevens will seldom stay on anything for very long because there's always so much out there. Life is a buffet. Why am I going to only have this when there's all these other things I can also have? And so ideas, and it's all in the head, ideas are fantastic. And we love to discuss those. So the seven, as I said, when in health, begins to look more like a five, which is they don't need to be chasing everything around them. They don't need to be pursuing every idea. They can actually settle down and do their work. When they become particularly stressed, sevens who are really easygoing and kind of like, hey, life is great. Why don't we just have fun? It's good enough. You know, you don't have to work too hard or be too crazy about getting everything perfect. Can ping to the one, and the one is the reformer, but at the low side of the one, it's the perfectionist. The sevens start to become really anal about things. And like, this has to be done this way. And they become exacting. The external judgment they felt got inside them, and they became really, really harsh on themselves and can be on other people at times as well. So that's what happens when the seven goes to stress and what happens when the seven goes to health. All right, so I've described the seven, but I've got two panelists here who are sevens, and I would love to hear from you two. Yes, I am also, I know nothing about seven, so I'm going to ask you two about the seven, and you tell me. So I've said a lot about the seven, but I'd love to hear from you. Does that relate to you, or what language would you use? And again, sevens are very different. It's not like we're all the same in terms of how we exhibit our sevenness. So that's what's also very interesting. I'd love to hear from you guys about that.
I think it describes me for most part, because you know, I have three children, and once they got like a certain age and they were no longer home all day, I found myself like looking for something else to do. And I'm always like involved. And yeah, when people talk to me, my mind is going to, okay, what do I have to do next? And what do I have to do next? And what do I have to do next? I mean, sitting here, I'm thinking that right now. So
even while I was talking,
many things like when I get home, I have to do this, and I have school tomorrow, and what am I going to do, and blah, blah, blah. So I think it pretty much rings true. And I do like the busyness, but then I also, like when it's winter time, I don't try to schedule anything. Like none of my kids have sports or anything like that. So that's our downtime of not really having much to do. And I kind of appreciate that. And like in my mind, I know fall and spring are busy. Winter is dead. And that's a good time to, I guess, recharge and go back in. But probably in the winter, I'm thinking, okay, this month I have to do this and this month I have to do that. So that's about it.
Yeah, I would agree. I was thinking today and looking back at some notes Nicole was saying, but was I supposed to bring notes? But I found myself in a stage of life with teenagers and a toddler. So basically, wow. My mind is just permanently so full it's empty.
So I don't, you know, I often don't have very much to say, but a bazillion things from Reckoning Realm. But anyway, but I came across some notes that were a little bit helpful. I feel I've kind of been exploring this Enneagram stuff this Enneagram wisdom for a long time, and started about 20 years ago. And in my solidly labeling myself. But anyway, so I'm about to turn 47. So I had a very late in life child. Anyway, I explored it deeply, and then I kind of left it for a while. Actually, what I did was a bit of an odd reaction. I thought, I'm not this kind of dabbler, dilettante, whatever. I'm going to go and get a PhD. So off I moved my family. I moved my family, you know, from the U.S. to Canada, and started up a whole new life because I thought I was going to become a specialist in one particular area. Needless to say, I worked really hard for many years, but it's not a finished PhD. But anyway, life intervened. But all of that was just to say I came across a note that said, an adrenaline addict with champagne in your blood. Mm. So that is pretty much what I would say has described me for about 15 years. Solidly, you know, all of my 20s and maybe 18 years, all of my 20s, most of my 30s. And just recently, I've entered into a totally different seven stage. And I think I mentioned that to you before when I first met you, Joel. But yeah, a lot of pain, disintegration of my extended family. And my dad died 2 days after I had this unexpected third child. And my sister got breast cancer the same week. And it was just a really intense fall. And she had lost her husband a few years before that to cancer with 4 young kids. So a very intensive 4 or 5 years, which when I came back to really solid work with the Enneagram made me realize I was in quite a different space. I'd become a different kind of seven. And I was responding in a lot of the stress ways. Hmm. And so now I sometimes don't really recognize myself because I think, gosh, you know, I'm in fairly regular therapy and I am finding ways to go, well, you know what? It was a crap weekend. It was a crap weekend. Rather than saying, it was all good. We got a hike on the beach and we did this and we did that. And, you know, which is what I would always have done. And, you know, I've always kind of been the life of the party. And I wouldn't necessarily describe myself as that now, but that's not always a bad thing. You know, sometimes I'm a little bit calmer and getting used to the fact that life isn't all always another fabulous adventure. Some of it is kind of heavy duty and needs to be dwelled in for a bit.
Nice. Yeah. And that's the thing, that when growth happens, you stop going to the worst parts of this, of the lower side of the seven, and you start to ascend to the higher side. And that's what's wonderful about all types can do that.
The higher side. I'm just trying to.
So sevens have a big challenge before them, and that is to slow down enough to begin to deal with internal pain. I said earlier that head types tend to think about their emotions. It's really more difficult for them to feel their emotions. Now, this is an exaggeration, of course. Every type, everybody feels something. We all feel sad. We all feel grief. We all feel happy. We've got the emotions. But what happens for head types is the feeling gets quickly translated to thought, whereas heart types will spend some time, particularly fours, will spend a whole lot more time with that emotion and exploring it. But that's where the work of the seven is we have to do our work to stay present to pain long enough to experience the emotion. Have either one of you done it? Where are you in the process of dealing with emotions? I'd like to hear about that. How do you process emotions? And you don't have to have the right answer. You can have a terrible answer, and it's great because we're all at different ranges in terms of our, you know, where we are at our stage of life.
I think I still just kind of analyze it. I do feel things. I do cry. Whatever, but I analyze it. But at the last time that Joel and I met, I was saying how whenever I run, I have to have music on because, like, I just want to drown out my thoughts. And so when we were talking, we're like, maybe start at the beginning with nothing and see, like, do a check-in of your body, pay attention to the breathing, how are you feeling, and things like that, and process that. And I've been doing that for the last couple of weeks, just at the beginning. And I'm finding that I'm able to actually see exactly how I'm feeling. And then at the end of the run, like, see how I was at the beginning and to the end. And if it's a difference, am I happier, if I'm more, you know, more upset because of whatever I felt at the beginning, you know. So I find, so I'm probably now just probably a little bit able to tap into some emotion. But I know when I'm anxious, like I always say, I'm anxious. Or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm going to do, but, and just move on to the next thing. So,
When I first read and learned a little bit about the idea of sevens not really being in touch, I really rebelled against it. In fact, I originally thought I was a four. And, you know, when I went through it, I was pretty convinced that I was a four. And I realized it was because I was very attracted to especially films and books and anything that was heavy duty, emotional, and especially painful stuff. I remember telling everyone my favorite movie in my 20s was Breaking the Waves, this Lars von Trier movie that's really intense. It's very, and it's very sad, and it's very, and it's kind of explores all these spiritual and intense themes. And, but I kind of realized it was all a little bit at hands, you know, a little bit at a remove. And I'd say I'm only just recently and, you know, in the last, maybe in the last 5 years, 5 or 7 years, starting to experience a lot more of my own responses to pain. I remember, you know, as my dad was kind of disappearing into the fog of Alzheimer's. And it's funny you say, because I'm a runner too. And that's a lot of my, I really need to run. And I went through a whole stage where every run I did, I was bawling. And I was kind of realizing, you know, it was all this sense of the person who I thought knew me the most was disappearing into not knowing me at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then starting to realize there's a lot to do with, I think for sevens, there's a lot to do with wanting to be known, yeah. Really known. Yeah. And just on the running front, I was going to say, so I had a weird experience in December, a couple of days before Christmas, and I had a detached retina, which is a total pain in the neck. But anyway, so I had emergency surgery for that. And then I couldn't run for about 6 weeks. And I slowly got back into it. But I'm exactly like you. I've always listened to music. And then I started listening to articles because I couldn't read very well for a month or so. And then I started to just kind of have silent times. Mm. And it's a little scary to suddenly be. Anyway, so it's funny that we are, I very much relate to that.
Yeah. It's interesting you say silent because it's one of the paths for the seven towards growth is silence and rest, the two of them together. And for each type, this is something different. There's a different particular path towards undoing the type. But when you hear yours, there's almost always a visceral reaction because it works against everything that your type is designed to do. So the idea of like, you even have that reaction of like not running for 6 weeks. Oh my God, what would that be like? Yeah, there's an anxiety that creeps up for a lot of sevens when they can't be doing those things, when you can't be in the space of running. I thought it was interesting, the two of you are runners. And one of the questions I asked you, Nicole, early on was, you know, sevens run, right? But we're running on the inside, so it's interesting that you're also running on the outside. Like it's a manifestation of what's going on the inside.
This isn't a good thing to admit, but I suddenly realized I was really angry like 5 or 7 years ago. And I started to think, gosh, I've become one of these yellers. Like I kind of yell at my beautiful girls who were kind of young. And I'm not saying I'm all done with that, but I'm definitely further away. I probably cry a lot more now, not necessarily in front of them, but at least I've found a few outlets where I do kind of get some of that emotion. But I realized I would never have been described for, you know, my 20s and 30s as a person with much anger. And it's not a good thing. And it's a something I'm working against now, obviously, but and starting to realize, well, what is it? What is this? Why? I mean, obviously, it was fear translating as anger or sadness translating as anger. And I'm trying to stop and go, whew, what is it that my 15-year-old has just said to me? What is that nerve that is being scraped? Or what is it that, you know, this realization of this torn relationship in the extended family, what am I seeking after that? You know, how can I respond and just go, that really hurts, that's really painful, as opposed to, you know, sort of lashing out.
It's interesting because I do the same. Like, that's one of the things I do is to always stop myself. So this is another one of my life hacks, is the moment something triggers my anger, is that I allow that to cause me to then say, okay, what's going on deeper on the inside? So the moment my anger surfaces, the moment something like that happens, it's what's going on more deeply. We're watching something sad. Like, you went way into a space I have avoided all of my life, which is to watch anything that's sad or read anything that's sad. I've hated it. So my wife would say, Patty would say, hey, Joel, you want to watch, there's a couple movies out there. There's one that's, you know, this movie, and then there's this movie. If it had even anything remotely to do with like pain, sadness, how it ends, does this end sad? Because if it ends sad, I'm out. I'm not into that. And in the recent years, I've actually found those things to be really powerful tools. I'd like to hear if you guys have, you know, some of your tools maybe to access the emotional center, is that those are actually helpful to me now. So Patty will say, hey, do you want to watch This Is Us? And every time I say, my initial reaction is, hell no. But then I stop myself and I say, okay, this is probably the right thing to do for me because it's been a while since I've cried. And I think for sevens, it's very common for us to not cry for a while. And the two emotions that we'll oftentimes experience are anxiety and depression outside of happy. But seldom will we allow sadness to stay and hang around. So watching that provokes the sadness and calls up the tears. And in that moment, I do this thing of, so what else is going on inside of me? What is this calling up? It's a memory. It's something else that's happening. And pretty often, stuff will come up, will emerge. And if it doesn't, I still allow myself to just cry. So interested, you guys have any of those sort of habits or patterns or ways of accessing your emotional center?
Yeah, I'm on the low end. Like, I can tolerate This Is Us, and I probably won't watch anything else that causes me to cry. We went to go see Wrinkle in Time, and I knew it had a positive ending at the end, but there was a sad part in there, but I knew it was going to be a happy ending, and that is probably the only reason, I mean, besides Max, who wanted me to go see it. I used to like them, but I don't go to them. I would prefer an action or a comedy. I don't want to see anything that's sad right now.
Funny. I mean, I'm totally the opposite. So that's a bizarre thing. That's my go-to. And I have a daughter. I have one daughter who really, you know, she really likes sad movies. she was watching some psychological, intense, you know, two climbers in the Andes, one who lets the other go on a rope, and, you know, at a really young age, and kind of it really like, anyway, but yeah, so I'm totally the opposite, but I think that it was, it's only been really recently that I've started to address my own emotional responses to things. And I hear you about depression. I've experienced depression in the last 8 years, a couple times, quite intense periods of depression, which has been a horrifying shock to me. Because as I said, we've moved a lot. I'm restless. We're 6 years in the place we're in right now. That's the longest I've ever been. And I'm very antsy right now. But I'm trying to kind of just go, but this is where life is at. And I'm nurturing and cultivating and not let that kind of go into a,
yeah, that's okay. We think out loud, you know, that's what we do. That's right. Once the mouth is in motion, then the brain starts going, yeah. Talk a little bit about the positive, the things that sevens tend to you know, you mentioned you were the life of the party. That's not all a bad thing. I mean, there's aspects of it that you realize I'm doing this because of, you know, trying not to deal with any, I hate sadness. I want to just have fun. It's the gluttony that's activating, you know, when you're wanting to consume. But it's not everything. There's also a really positive side to being a person that wants to entertain, right? Six, sevens tend to be entertainers. But, you know, even introverted sevens, we're very socially aware. We want to see people interact and have a good time. And when we see somebody down, we figure we can fix them. Because everything's fixable to the mind of a seven, right?
Especially your partner.
Especially our partners. Yes, yes. Let me fix it. So, and that's head triad, by the way. That's not unique to the seven, right? So some of you fives and sixes, you get that. That's a very, very head type thing. You just, oh yeah, we can solve this. We can fix this. And we're optimistic about it. We think, yeah, there's a way forward. So let's talk a little bit about what are the positive aspects to your sevenness in terms of relationships, and what do you feel like you bring?
With the, like, being the life of the party or whatever, I wouldn't consider myself that, which is kind of funny because I was saying when we were going over the sevens, yeah, would like to have people over, but I won't have people over because I'm afraid that they're going to be bored and I won't be able to entertain them, which, so I never have guests. But when I'm out about, like, or at the school or in my town, like, I find, like, I'm an easy person to talk to, or I can find people to help volunteer with things like that. I don't have a problem with that, and I see that as a strength. And I think that people appreciate that, and I think as a seven, too, you're able to tune in to some emotions of some people, and you can kind of help them feel like they're part of the group if they're not part of the group. I think as a seven who's always trying to think of different things to do that they can't sit still, you're able to also help people who are sitting still that want something to do, help them find something to do. And I think as a seven, it works well with my family because since my husband works a lot and my kids have many things that they're involved in and I want to be involved in a lot of things, it enables me to be able to do those things, because if I weren't like all over the place, I think that it would be really, really difficult to maintain a schedule. And the work that I work with small children all the time, and they don't sit still. And so I'm able to, you know, go on and maneuver the maze with them. So, I mean, I see some positives to it.
I think I would agree with a lot of what Nicole said. We've moved a lot. I find it easy to set up community. And I know my husband has totally relied on that. He's just recently discovered he's a five, and he's an Irish five, no less, from Northern Ireland. So he could do without people altogether, basically. And he says to me, well, what do you need friends? Why do I need a friend? I got you. I don't really. But he kind of talks about how he sets up the playing field and I plant it and provide the party and organize the games and do the games and keep the grass growing and blah, 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 blah. Sometimes I think when you reach certain stages, I keep veering to the negatives, but it can be really exhausting because I think most sevens do need some sort of re-energizing space. And it almost feels like you're working against yourself to suddenly become the person who doesn't really need to see people or doesn't really need to be the adventure maker. And I find I have to work against myself to kind of go, oh no, we don't need to do seven things today. Oh, we've got a free weekend. We don't need to go off hiking to New Hampshire. Or, you know, I'm making a nice meal. We better invite six people. Why am I cooking unless we're going to invite 17? You know, so for me to kind of go, oh, wait a sec, but I'm really tired. I don't really need to do all this. And he certainly doesn't need it. And maybe my kids need to see a bit of kind of choosing not to.
It's interesting you mentioned that because you mentioned being concerned about being boring. Mm-hmm. I think that sort of ties in with also the issue of rest for the seven. Do you feel the social responsibility of having to keep things going? And then when you're really exhausted and burned out and you can't go, that there's sort of almost a shame and like, how do I get away without being seen as tired? Because I don't want to be seen as tired. I don't want to be seen as boring. I don't want to be seen as
I mean, this sounds really extreme, but I think that that has kind of been when I've gone into sort of states of depression. In, you know, obviously all these other life factors involved, but I think even just the inner shame kind of got me a bit stuck in a bit of a mire of realizing. I think my husband is always a little shocked because I can go way further than him socially and engaged and all the rest, but then I crash quite a bit deeper. Like I suddenly am, I'm basically like, I don't want to see anybody. I need the kids away from me. I kind of just want, you know, it's like I want to crawl into a hole because I don't really know my own extents. I'm not able to say much sooner in the process, it's okay to go home now.
You see the warning signs, right? Right. Yeah. Do you relate to any of that?
I'm not there yet. I'm not really sure. I'll have to ponder that for a little while because I don't know what my crash is yet.
Okay, so we've talked about how the seven processes pain or doesn't process pain. The strengths, some of the strengths of the seven, to keep people buoyed, to keep the thing going. I think one of the things that is welcomed by a lot of people is the seven is visionary, has big ideas, knows how to keep things moving oftentimes. That is sometimes received well by people, and people say, oh, that's great. Yes, what a wonderful idea. But then oftentimes it's also met with a little bit of resistance, like, oh boy, here we go again. And the seven will tend to kind of say, but it'll work, really, really, trust me, it'll work. Do you find yourselves doing that, running into that in your circles as well?
Definitely. Just today, for instance, so my son has had soccer practice at 7. My husband has an appointment at 7:30, but he works in Cambridge, and I had to be here at 7 o'clock. So immediately when I told my husband, Alex has practice at this, oh my gosh, it's not going to work, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, wait a minute. And then I lay everything out and I'm like, this is what we're going to do, blah, 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 blah. And so like, oh no, this is just too much. I can't. And I'm like, no, just, this is going to work. Just do it. And I was on time. Alex was on time. And I hope he is on time. But but like all the time, like I find like, okay, these are the things coming in. And if I bring it up or whatever, like you could hear that, like everybody, and I'm like, wait a minute, you know, I've already thought out how everybody's going to get to A to B to C or whatever. And hopefully everybody will be happy.
I'm exactly like Nicole. And my husband kind of jokes that if half an hour before we have to be somewhere or we have to do something, Susanna starts adding in 7 more things and he starts taking, you know, 3 or 4 things away. And that's exactly how it works in our house. You know, he says, we're not going to be able to. I'm like, what do you mean? Of course we can. And then we can do this too. And I can just quickly bake this before we go. And then I'll just grab, you know, and da, da, da. But I think that, you know, on the positive, I keep going to the negative. Now this is going to sound really forced. But for most of my life, people have really wanted to be with me and they feel really engaged. I just started effervescence and bubbly and make people feel at ease, like Nicole was saying at the beginning, and an energy and intensity that displays to those I'm in relationship with that I care about them and I'm interested in them. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's a huge positive and a huge plus of the seven, but on the unhealthy side can be too intense. And I don't think too many people in my friendship life have said too much, but definitely my husband has kind of said, you know, when it goes on the unhealthy side can be too much and too intense and too interested and too exhausting. And, you know, stop and let me savor this moment instead of careening into the next with your fabulous plans for it to be even better.
Yes. It's like marathon running. Once you finish, when's the next one?
What's the next one? Spoken like a seven, yes. What are some things you think you would like other types to understand about you? Sometimes you're misunderstood in this way. I mean, one of the things you start out with, Susanna, you said, you know, I do have feelings. I do feel things. Sevens, by the way, are oftentimes confused by people who look at sevens as being emotional. Because we're tactile, oftentimes touching. Not all sevens are, but a ton of sevens I know, and this seems to be true in the literature that's out there, a ton of sevens are touchy-feely people. So hugs, really enthusiastic to see people, except for Nicole. So. But also very, very expressive in the way we go about life. So that can be translated as emotional. But then by others, we're read as not really being in touch with our emotions. Some misunderstand the enthusiasm of a seven and read it in certain ways. Sometimes we are misunderstood because of our energy or, you know, our ideas. Here's one thing I'll say, and then you think about, like, what would you like to for people to know? Many times my ideas, I'll have this idea over here, this idea over here, and this idea. None of them seem to relate to each other. And for people, we'll say, wait, I don't get what you're trying to do here. I don't understand. Why are you off to this when we were just talking about this or doing this, and you're over here? And then a few minutes later, you're down over on this side. Like, how did you, I don't follow. And one of the things that was so helpful in the literature as I read it is sevens have a capacity of synthesizing disparate information. And they can see it. And they can see things that most other people cannot see. And that's what then causes us to be able to do the things we do, which many people think are Herculean efforts. You know, like we can do things that surprise a lot of people, and either through our energy or through our creativity or ideas. But oftentimes, I don't help people to follow those dots, because in my mind, I see the connections. I just fail to communicate the connections. And so that's one of the problems I've oftentimes run into, and having that oftentimes brought up to my attention. So there it is. Okay. Are we good?
I think one for me as a seven is sevens have a hard time saying no to things when people ask them to do something. And when we do say no, we feel let down that we're letting, and then we're letting you down. And then sometimes we project that feeling onto you. And then we feel that you're upset with us or something. And so there's some process that I guess needs to be worked through. So, I mean, don't be upset when we say no. It's not anything that we don't want to do it, because sometimes we can't help ourselves. We're always like, yes. And then finally, when we do say no, it takes so much strength to be able to do that. And it's not to you. It's just for us, I guess. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
That's the only
thing. I have a huge problem with the expectation that others are seeing all those disparate ideas and getting them. So I do speak, I don't finish at 95% of my sentences. And I used to be better at it. I'm even worse now. But at least when I was sort of in the scholarly community, I tried. But now that I'm mostly speaking to teenagers and a toddler, I don't even bother trying. But anyway, but when I speak to my husband, I can see he's kind of with me for a few minutes, and then his eyes glaze over, and then finally he's able to say, total overload. I forget the expression now. I'm blanking on the, but it's not overload, but it's something like
saturated or overwhelmed, or
yeah, it's not overwhelmed, but it's basically like I'm drowning. I'm completely drowning, and you're all over. And we've gotten a little bit better as he started studying the Enneagram. We've gotten better at me being able to go, but I'm just showing all the things that relate. It's your job now to pull them together and to kind of synthesize it down. But it's your job to be practical. With most people, I don't really expect that, but I think I forget that other people are not thinking in the same way as me. Yeah. And so they're really with me for quite a long way. And then they're just like, what was all that about?
Yeah. I had an eight teacher out in San Francisco, and he was one of the teachers there. And he said, yeah, when sevens start to do that, he says, I just lose, I'm gone. Like, because you get into your head and you get so deep into that space that it's hard for me to stay with them. I had no idea. Like, that really does happen to other types, but it's a good thing I'm married to somebody who stays with me for the most part. But Yeah.
I just, because you asked about it would be helpful for others to know about sevens. And I think they're often described as and painted as being kind of superficial because they're very, you know, touching on a lot of things. And I really rebelled against that from the first time I started realizing that I was definitely a seven, because I realized just because it's maybe outwardly mental doesn't mean that it's superficial, for sure. And just because we're touching on a lot of things or seeing the connections between a zillion different disparate things doesn't mean that there isn't depth there, but it's maybe not always so obvious or accessible or whatever.
Well, you know, the charm of the seven is we're playful and we like to play with people. Mm-hmm. And so for us, as so many times, sevens will be in a room and we'll be like laughing and being stupid. We have no problem being stupid. Sevens, no problem. Generally, we'll just be the ones that'll be on the floor doing something dumb, you know, and everybody's laughing and we're having a great time. And there's very little awareness, particularly, and I look for circles where that is, where I'm safe to do that. You see me in a room with a bunch of kids and there's a door closed and no other adult is watching. It is crazy. I have a grand old time. And none of it would ever want anybody else to see. But that's part of the playfulness of the childlikeness of the seven. They call them the eternal teens or eternal youths, because they never seem to grow up in that space of play. They just want to play, and have a good time. So they can sometimes be seen as being sort of fluffy, superficial, silly, not really serious. But then when you ask a seven a question, that's something in their space, in their world, you know, the head center, the sevens go deep. And people are oftentimes shocked. Wow. And so I'd have these looks from people like, dude, you're actually pretty smart. Like, so then that meant like you actually thought I was stupid beforehand. And I would feel that and be like, oh man, I hate that, right? So I'd have this, but yet at the same time, I don't want to let go of play. So that's a...
But there's another aspect to play, which is curiosity.
Curiosity,
and it's an awesome thing to be a curious learner or to be a curious lover of learning. And I think that, you know, and also you said to not be afraid of being stupid. I also am never, I'm never afraid of, I couldn't care less if people think I don't know something. Because if I think that they know something about something I want to know about, I am right in there and I'll ask them every question and, you know, and my husband would never ask anyone for directions. I will ask anybody anything, you know, because I'm keen to interact with them, because I'm keen to get knowledge that I don't know or, you know, that I don't have, or I'm keen to find out what other people are engaged in or know about or whatever. And so I think that, you know, I think that some of that playfulness, it's not all far from the sobriety end. Some of it is really life
Absolutely.
Awesomeness.
Absolutely. Those are things we never want to let go of. And, you know, the upside to that. So we've talked quite a bit. Let's get some questions from you guys about the seven. Yeah.
A seven goes to a five during health. Explain how they benefit from a five.
Sure. Yeah, so fives don't always need to be the life of the party. They don't always need to be entertaining. They don't always need to be chasing something. So fives slow down. Fives are ones that will stay with a particular research project until they get stressed, and then they ping to the seven and start to look like us. But when they are healthy, they're staying at the task and completing the task and researching it thoroughly, and they don't flit about, which is what's sevens tend to do, is running from one thing to the next to satiate the appetite, to keep the system going, keep the energy up. Yeah.
When you talked about feeling depression, so can you describe what that looks like? And also, what's the way through it? Or what your hope is in emerging from it, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, good question.
What it looked like for me, what it has looked like for me in a couple of periods has been quite horrifying to me, actually, because just a sudden total lack of desire to be as curious and keen and engaged with life. it translated for me really into becoming quite an angry person. Angry because I was deeply sad, because I am deeply sad. There's parts of grief that I'm really not really worked through. And the way through it for me has been, I've maybe had three kind of experiences. And the first two were fairly short-lived. And the way through for me was suddenly to get involved in, you know, another major project, like we moved, or, well, that's, we moved and a whole, had to set up a whole new life. We moved from Cincinnati back to Boston. And the most recent time was I sort of realized I had really quite intense postpartum depression about 8 months after my little one was born, but realized it was really all to do with death and everything else that was kind of going on. It was really intense period. Not to get too totally involved, but really the way that I've started to is regular therapy and starting to kind of dive into what is it that I might be responding to in anger that is really like really deep fears that I've not really dealt with or responded to? What is it about, you know, the relationship with my parents, or, you know, the grief over my dad's death and the relationship with, you know, what it's been to stick with the pain, the grief, and to actually go through. I've even found it sometimes I've kind of realized going to a session that, oh, I'm a bit bored of this. Like, I just want to be kind of happy. I just want to go and meet up with people and go for coffee. And, you know, why am I spending an hour and good money doing this? I could go and get a massage. And then to be reminded to spend time writing, which is what I do for a living, but also to spend time kind of exploring a little further has, that's just been huge for me. And to not take on new projects and to not take, I mean, new life projects, I mean, not, and to just kind of say, this is my time for going through this, as dull and as painful, like pain for me, you talk about being afraid of it. I actually think I've kind of found pain or dealing with pain boring. Like, I'd rather be doing the adventures in life and having the fun, sure, and being the party. So I guess I would kind of say that. But I just wanted to say something about working towards the five, consistency. And well, I have a five in my life. The most, you know, important person in my life is a five. And that's really grated against me for a very long time until, obviously, there's things I love about. There's many things. I love everything about him in some way, but, you know, there's, but what I've started to realize are the things that that would make me more whole. And that would be being more consistent, being more dependable, that I'm not going to fly off into another project or interest or whatever. Sorry.
No. All right, break.
Well, they did end abruptly, but wow, that wraps up season one of the Enneagram Panels podcast. Thank you all so much for joining us, and a special thanks to our seven panel. But I wanted to say one more thing, actually, before we closed out. As this podcast has come out and I've been discussing it with other people and friends, and I think there's a tendency to want to find out what your number is, so that you can be more self-aware or hear from other people who may share a similar kind of bent and motivation in the world. And it's really important to do that. And that's a really good thing. But I think it's actually just as important to understand the Enneagram as a whole, because there's so many people that you interact with on a daily basis who don't think like you, who don't act like you, who don't process information and motivation like you. And it's really important to understand where other people are coming from. I often say that the Enneagram is a tool for empathy and self-awareness. And the empathy comes from really understanding other people and how your type might interact with their type. And so I know for a lot of us, we talk about how this has transformed our marriage or some of our friendships or our work relationships. And I think that comes as a result, not just of knowing your number, but understanding and grasping the system as a whole and understanding the difference between people. So we hope you've enjoyed this journey, to those of you who have come on the whole journey with us, and hope you continue to learn. We have some interesting ideas for what could be next for this podcast, for what we're doing here in just the north end of Boston. So wherever you're listening from, though, it's great to have you. Thank you so much for joining us. And may you continue in your journey toward more empathy and self-awareness. Until next time, have a good one, my friends.